How are you feeling today, Martin? You feeling all right?
I've done quite a lot of napping, I have to say, through the day. I sort of staggered out of Cress's house earlier on this morning, a little bleary-eyed and worse for wear. But I'm feeling okay now. Good. I'm feeling a lot better.
I'm glad to hear it, Martin. I don't think you're as bad as you thought you were last night. You were still, I mean, you still managed to edit a podcast. So I think you were okay, but yeah, I'm glad to hear. I'm feeling all right. I've still got quite a lot of cleaning up to do from last night's Eurovision party, but I think, you know, we barely skimmed the surface really in that reaction episode. It was just to get our raw reaction. So this episode is all about really getting into everything that went on in yesterday's big grand final, and really just like dissecting it and just thinking about looking into everything that's happened. So we've got lots to talk about in this edition of
Nulpois.
Nulpois is shameful.
Nulpois is lack of respect for jurors.
It's the ultimate humiliation.
The shame that they must be feeling.
Nulpois is no fun.
Yes, welcome along to this edition of Nulpois with myself, Martin, and Laura. And
hello.
If you missed any of our episodes that we did over the whole of the Eurovision week, make sure you go back and check them out. We've been in Turin, we've been having a wonderful time, and hopefully bringing you some of the atmosphere, thoughts from fans in the Eurovision Village, our exclusive interview with City Zenny.
Yes.
In a lovely, beautiful piazza. Well, in the middle
was
of Turin.
It exclusive, or was it just...
It was exclusive to us.
Yes,
so
okay, exclusively to the podcast.
Just trying to zhuzh it up a bit.
I know you were, but you know, yeah.
So go and check those out if you haven't already.
They are good.
As Chris mentioned, lots to come today, including a bit of a chat with a bit of a friend of the podcast, Paul Jordan, a.k.a. Dr. Eurovision, who's going to be really kind of delving into what the scoreboard actually means and what we maybe were able to learn about some of the voting things that went on last night that maybe you noticed or maybe you didn't notice. All of that to come. But first, a few stats to start off with. Everybody loves the stats when it comes to Eurovision, and you get all nerdy, you know, oh, it's the best
I
result.
Love a stat.
So we thought we'd bring you some of these. Shall I start? I'll start in
Go
saying that a few UK stats to start off with. This results, Sam Ryder coming second for the UK, which was amazing. The UK's best result in 24 years.
Wow.
1998 was the last time we did that well, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, and it's also their first top three result since 2002. Martin?
The UK, this is the UK's 16th time as a runner-up in the Eurovision Song Contest since it started.
That's crazy. We're always second, it seems. And just to remind you, we did win the jury vote. The UK won the jury vote and came fifth in the televote. So some people saying, oh, you know, it's the public, you know, didn't know what they were doing. We still came fifth in the televote, which for the UK is also very, very strong.
Italy, by the way, this is their fifth consecutive top 10 finish in the competition.
Yeah.
Although we have to say that we weren't quite as impressed with Italy's performance as we would be.
We'll go into that a bit more when we do kind of general thoughts, but I agree, yeah, unfortunately. But hey, they still got top 10. And finally, in the winners section for Sweden as well, this was their best result since their win in 2015.
In the losers section, and this is, I mean... I can't say I'm surprised to have seen the people or the countries at the bottom of the leaderboard that were at the bottom of the leaderboard last night, but France, it's the second worst result in France's history of the competition. We could do a whole podcast episode about France's participation in the Eurovision Song Contest.
I think we should.
Their heart's not in it, is it? They just don't seem to care.
No, I agree. And it's a bit like with Germany as well, who's another stat we've got. And they finished last night for the eighth time. And I did have a look at how many times the UK has finished last, and it's five. So as much as we go on that, you know, oh, the UK's always last, five times is still still a lot, and it's been definitely more recently. But Germany's finished eight times last. So yeah, and again, I think we should go into this a bit more later on about why that might have been, and the same with France as well. But very interesting to hear. It's not just the UK that's hated on or anything like that. It is about the songs.
So coming up, talking to Dr. Eurovision, but first, a bit of a general thought now on the whole situation. We've had, 24 or so hours to digest what happened. And how are you feeling now one day on?
I'm feeling, again, still really happy at the UK's results. A little vindicated with having to put up with people who don't know anything about Eurovision saying, oh, the UK is going to be last. Like, if I would say to them, oh, you know, they're going to do really well. Oh, are they really? Oh, do you think so? The UK. All these people who don't have a bloody clue thinking, you know, it's the same thing, Martin. It reminds me, you know. It's like if, for example, you know, I don't mind football. I watch it a little bit, but I don't know that much about it. Say there was a big match and I watched this one big match, and then I just started spouting opinions to someone who watched it all year round, and I was like, well, they're not going to win this, are they, because of this? And that person would be like, well, actually, you know, and give me stats about everything going on throughout the year. And I just went, really, do you think so? Oh, I don't think so. And I'm suddenly some expert for some reason because I've watched one match. Why do these people, I mean, fine, I can understand, because it's a narrative that we've been sold about the fact that the UK can never do well. But I just don't understand why, even when, you know, someone tries to explain to them, oh, no, but actually it is a good song this year. And people still were adamant when I spoke to them that there's no way the UK could do well. And I was sick of it, Martin.
Yes, it was a great party. Do you know what I realised earlier on today? That you and I aren't, whilst we're all right at predicting who's going to do okay, we're not very good at predicting winners. The bookies predicted it pretty early on.
My thing this year was just, I knew the UK were going to do well, but it was just how well, because it was such an unknown with how much people were going to, you know, vote for them. Because we even said in our party, everyone at the beginning were going, oh, Ukraine's going to win, Ukraine's going to win. Then when we got round to the voting, I said, well, has anyone here voted for Ukraine? Nobody had. The problem with Ukraine winning is that everyone has now been moaning about it being a sympathy vote and pity vote. And that's the narrative we're getting now, rather than it being, oh, well, so, you know, it's all political because of, you know, neighbouring countries. Now people are saying, oh, well, it's political because of the war, and Ukraine only won because of the war and not because it was a good song. The best song should have won. And I don't know. I find that a bit tiring as well.
I just think there are some things where it's allowed to be more than a song contest, right?
Yeah.
And I reckon a war in another country where people are being killed and are fighting such awful, awful attacks and dreadful humanitarian crises, I think it's okay to vote for them in a song contest in a show of solidarity. I think that's absolutely legitimate. In the same way that when Russia annexed Crimea in 2014, there was a lot of people going, oh, like, why are people booing Russia? Like, it's, you know, you shouldn't boo them. You know, it's just the act. They're I think it is legitimately okay to boo the representative of a country that's just invaded another country. I do think that that's probably all right in this free and open society in which we live. And in the same fashion, I think it's a wonderful thing to do to show your support for a country in dire, dire need by voting for them in a song contest, even if you didn't think that their song was great. I just think that's fine.
Yes, I totally agree. And also, it's a public vote. The public will vote how they want to vote. They don't need to be confined. They can vote however they want. Loads of people at our party voted for Norway because they liked the silliness of giving a wolf a banana. They probably didn't think it was the best song either, but they enjoyed it. They're allowed to just vote for something they want to vote for. That's why there is a jury vote, because they will look intricate technicalities and things like that. That is the point of it. I do. And also another thing is that Ukraine song, it's
you're
not...
on your blinking high horse today, aren't you? My word.
I've kept it all boiled up, Martin. All this stuff that's going on that I've been reading all day. But just one more thing, let me just say, with Ukraine as well, is I would understand this annoyance if Ukraine sent a stupid song that they didn't care about and that you know, that was mocking Eurovision, or a song that they didn't put their heart into. But they clearly put their heart into that song, and it clearly meant something to them. The song does have a catchiness to it. It's not some kind of rubbishness. You know, if it was like, for example, you know, France's song, I Want to Have a Mustache, and they'd said something just stupid like and that one, I would understand people like, well, this is a bit ridiculous, but it's a good song. It might not be everybody's taste. People might not like the rapping. I understand that. But you can't deny, you know, they went there to win, and they wrote a song that was capable of winning.
Yeah, I mean, you are right. And I've said before, the Ukrainian entry, you know, it wasn't to my taste, but you're right. It was a legitimate attempt at a win at Eurovision. It wasn't a silly song about a mustache or giving a wolf a banana.
As far as we know.
As far as we're aware.
Right, so we've given a bit of a general reaction to everything that's happened, what went on, the winners, the losers. But I think an important thing to touch on is the voting, because obviously that makes such a difference, of course, to the night and how it goes. And who better to speak to about this? Because we know a bit about voting, but I think we need a bit of an expert hand in this. And of course, the person we're turning to is Dr. Eurovision, a.k.a. Paul Jordan. Paul, how are you, first of all? How are you feeling?
I am feeling very good, thank you very much. I am feeling very tired, but feeling elated. We've done well. The UK came second.
Woo-hoo!
Our best placing in 24 years.
Yes.
I'm ecstatic.
Yeah, great. Us too. Yeah, it's been brilliant, hasn't it? I think very quickly first, I wanted to just ask you, because I had loads of people at the Eurovision party I was hosting asking, well, what's going on with the voting and how does it work? Because obviously it's a sort of new system we've got where it's split. You've got the jury points and then suddenly all these points come flooding in with the public. So interested to know just how that works and how what it means, basically.
Yeah, so I think it's one of those things where we've been brought up and we grew up with, you know, the traditional scoreboard and hello, Cyprus, give the points, etc. So we have that. We still have that. That's the jury votes. That's Friday night's votes. And UK won. The UK won the jury vote. That's amazing. I'm so excited about that. And then when it comes to the public vote, they amalgamate them. So they add them all together and you have from the bottom of the scoreboard all the way to the top, and they add them all. So the entire points for Poland, for UK, for Ukraine, for Spain, and that's where they're added together. So you've still got the traditional voting method, but they just add them together. And that's where the excitement happens, because you don't know who's won until the very, very end.
I think it's worth talking about the public vote and the sort of public vote split this year, because it felt really influential, of course, with Ukraine, because although they did pretty well with the jury, I have to say, better than I thought they were going to do, possibly. I think they came fourth with the jury. That public vote for them, I can't remember a time where a song has got that huge amount of the public vote.
I knew Ukraine would win the public vote. I thought, fair enough, Ukraine's going to win it. It's going to be solidarity, it's humanitarianism. And I spoke to you before and I got emotional. I'm going to get emotional again. It's the least Europe could do, you know, pick up the phone and vote for Ukraine. It's a really powerful thing. I think it's a really powerful symbol of unity. That said, was it the best song? I'm not sure. It's all very subjective. That's why the juries are there. You know, the juries didn't vote it first. UK came first, which was amazing. I think overall it was a fair result. Ukraine know how to stage a song. They know how to do a good act. They've done well over the years. They are the only country, the one and only country remaining, which has a 100% qualification record from the semi-final to the final. And yeah, good luck to them. I think UK and Ukraine should be really proud.
About this jury's controversy, and I know we don't really have loads of information about this yet, but I was just intrigued to sort of talk this through with you, really. The point that throughout the night, there were six juries where we kept cutting to Martin Osterdahl instead of a presenter. And I thought that was maybe because there was technical difficulties in the, you know, satellite filming and all that kind of stuff. But it's now transpired that EBU has basically said there were voting irregularities in these six juries, and so instead they sort of amalgamated the votes. Is that correct?
I'm not entirely sure is the honest answer.
Yeah.
I think certainly when it comes to technology, it's very challenging. You've got the satellite delays, you've got all sorts of different things going on. It may well have been a technical problem. The jury and the public vote are scrutinized routinely, so I don't think it's about necessarily any kind of hint of corruption?
Yeah, I've got a little bit of a statement which they put out since that. But I don't know. I agree. I don't know if it is a corruption. But basically, they sort of said there were irregular voting patterns identified in the results of six countries, and I can give you those countries. I think they were Moldova. It was Georgia. Montenegro, Poland, I think was one of them as well, and Azerbaijan and San Marino. Sorry, were the six, and it's basically this idea that they identified in those six what they've said irregular voting patterns, and so because of this, they calculated a substitute aggregated result for each country. For both the second semi-final and the grand final. And what I thought was interesting is it said they calculated it based on the results of other countries with similar voting records. So they all almost kind of made up the votes, it feels. And I just wondered, I don't know, you might not know this off the top of your head, Paul, but has this happened before? Have they ever done something like this?
Without getting into conspiracy theories, I would say Eurovision voting is very fair, very scrutinised, but also the jury vote is certainly slightly dodgy, but overall I think the right song won.
I think so too, and that I suppose is what matters at the end of it all. Paul, thank you so much. Just before you go, any thoughts on where it's going to be held next year? Because there's been a lot of talk from President Zelensky about it happening in Kyiv.
I noticed as well Spain's already put a bid in to host it, and already Spain has bid for it.
Like, very happy to go to Spain. That'd be great. It's not without precedent that the UK has stepped in when other countries haven't hosted. We've won five times. We've hosted eight. Could well be the ninth time. It means, you know, UK came second. It feels a little bit like kind of logical that we'll be offered the opportunity. Let's see. I don't think it'll be in Ukraine. I don't think it should be either, because I think it'd be a big target. Yeah, I just wanted to, if I may, excuse me, it's been a very, very, very long weekend, but if I may, just say a big hug to my friends in Ukraine, and I hope they're doing okay.
I've seen pictures on the TV of families and friends gathered together watching the song contest and their elation when Ukraine won and what that win means to them with what's going on. Have you been getting a sense of the importance of the win for the people in Ukraine?
Excuse me. Absolutely. And I had a text from a friend, Marina, who I used to work with, and she just said, she was like, thank you. Just thank you for thinking of us. I'm so sorry. I know I'm tired and it's been an emotional weekend, but We I'll lower my voice. We might dismiss this thing as a bit of a silly thing, this, that, and the other, but it means something. And for, you know, people in Ukraine, and for, I say, my friend Marina, like, she felt kind of comforted by that. So if we comfort people by, you know, giving them the Eurovision victory, which, by the way, was well deserved. It was well performed. You know, then so be it. And I think the UK and Ukraine can be really proud. Both held up to scrutiny and both did well. And I think that's really good.
Thank you so much. Great to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
Right. I mean, we've spoken about our reaction to the wins and to the UK and all that interesting voting stuff. But I think we should just take a couple of picks of stuff that happened throughout the night as well and our thoughts on it. And I mean, the opener I found very interesting. It was them singing. It was the presenters and I think some artists as well singing Give Peace a Chance. All we're saying is Give Peace a Chance. Your thoughts on that, Martin? Quite a strong opener.
Really moving, actually, and something really special. There are era-defining moments that happen in Eurovision very occasionally. It's ultimately an entertainment show. But when the world is the way it is, that show becomes a time capsule for what's going on. And people will look back at the 2022 Eurovision Song Contest. They'll press play on the start. And they'll see that and they'll say, oh my goodness, this was the mood of Europe. And I think it really was. I think it captured the mood of people right over Europe. And just this real show of solidarity with Ukraine and a real sort of desire for the continent that we live on to be a better place and to be a place of peace. And I thought that was such a moving moment.
I totally agree, and it really set the tone for the rest of the night. It's like I said last night in the reaction episode, you really felt like you were watching something, you know, historic. And that is why, as we've said before, Eurovision is more than just a song contest. As you said, it is it's the mood of the countries. It's the mood of the continent. And yeah, you could see that from last night. What did you make of the presenting from last night? Obviously, we had Mika, who doesn't actually speak much Italian, but luckily for him, Eurovision is in English. So that was handy for him.
I liked Mika. I thought he was all right. I think he did a really good job.
Yeah.
I have this issue, as you know, with the too many cooks spoiling the broth. And once again, I think there was probably one too many presenters. I don't really understand why you need three people to present one show, but
especially when they didn't really cut to the green room that much. You know, there was very few
at all. Yeah, barely at all.
Yeah, so I mean, Mika, there was a strange, very long segment where they spoke about Italian hand gestures at great length. That must have been filling for some time because I've no idea why that took so long. Alessandro Catalan, who was one of the presenters, did a very interesting and brave, I would say, bold segment dressed in a green body morph suit that was very
tight. Something was bold. Yeah.
We talk about Europe being, you know, joined together. And I feel like at that one moment, every eye watching the Eurovision Song Contest was focused on one spot. And that really is togetherness, Martin.
Yes. Well, he did have it all together, didn't he?
That was certainly
interesting. I always think, right, with these bits, The Italians have known for some time that they're hosting Eurovision, right? They also know that almost 200 million people are watching it on TV. And you see some of the stuff that they come out and you think, honestly, this is what you're going for? This is what you've decided that you're going to put on TV? You could have had whatever you liked and you've gone with this. But, you know, this is why we love Eurovision, because it's bonkers.
Oh, utterly nuts. I do think, I think Laura Pausini, I think she kind of was a little bit of a weak link. I didn't quite get her sort of presence as much. But then I think that's probably what you're saying. They probably could have done it with two.
They could have done, well, quite easily. They could have easily done it with two. Mika was doing a great job. The two Italian presenters, I think, were fine. I just think we probably just didn't need both of them. Just One of them would have been good. Speaking of Mika, by the way, what did you make of his little bit in the middle, the medley of his songs? I loved it.
I enjoyed it. I really loved someone at the Eurovision party we were at saying they thought Mika should be burned at the stake.
Oh!
Because they just hated
really,
his songs.
Really dislike Mika for some reason. I really like him. I thought
he was really
great.
Enjoyed it. He was very... flexible, wasn't he? He was jumpy about all over the place, having a great... I mean, he could still hit the highs, can't he? He can still hit those highs. Yeah. He had a very interesting kind of, like, not see... kind of skin-coloured top that was, like, see-through but not see-through, that had all these, like, flowers and words on it about peace and stuff, that he... after he took off his bright suit... He was quite something.
He was. There was a bit in it as well where he sort of looked right down the barrel of the camera and basically told us how much he'd love Eurovision. And we were like, hold on a minute, mate. Yeah. You've been quoted many times as saying how much you don't like it. But anyway, there we go. Speaking of hitting high notes, and this is maybe a low note to talk about now. About notes and not hitting them. And I'm talking about Italy because there was a lot of people talking about Mahmood and Blanco, really tipping them to do well. And I was really excited to see their performance and I was really looking forward to it. And it just, it was, I mean, it was quite literally flat. They were singing out of tune. And the performance was just so lacking, and so much so that it was actually a big moment in the competition, just how well that didn't hit home.
I mean, they still did, you know, let's not forget, they did still do pretty well.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But, I mean, obviously, you will do slightly better as the host country. That always tends to happen. You get a few points. But they still did okay. And obviously, the jury would have been voting on a different night than that. I agree. They seemed a bit flat. It just didn't seem to be quite there for them. I wonder if possibly that's because, you know, Blanco wasn't there for all the rehearsals. Could that be a factor? Or could it just be a bit unlucky? You know, it's a difficult song to sing, but of course they are professionals, they know what they're doing. They did pick it up, it did get a bit better, but I have to say, about half of that song I was thinking, and I felt a bit bad because I was saying to everyone just before it came, oh, this is great, I love this song, this is going to do really well, and then they started it and I was like, oh no.
That's a bit of a shame. That was maybe a little bit of a downer moment. Måneskin, of course, another massive moment in
we're talking about rehearsals. We were apparently told that they had not rehearsed their performance one bit.
And seemingly didn't need to.
No, they were still very good. It turned out, because we were watching it, wondering what was wrong with Damiano, the lead singer, because he was kind of limping we were wondering if his leotard maybe had been hoisted a little too high. But no, it was actually he had broken, I think, his ankle. Fair play to him for still going on and doing it, because he did look like he was in pain.
Yeah, poor bloke. Did you hear the little nod towards the cocaine gate incident?
I felt they had to say something, because basically I think the presenter said, any tips for whoever wins, and I think he said something like, have fun and make sure you don't put your face too close to the table. I enjoyed. It's good they can laugh about it, because obviously at the time that was quite a stressful. And people still talk about that now. People were saying to me, like, oh, can't believe they got away with that thing. Look, they did a drugs test, all right. They were cleared of it. Get over it.
Okay, a couple more bits. Germany. Talk about Germany a little.
Yeah, well, just the fact that they were the ones that got Nullpoint from the jury, and so they were in a kind of similar position, I think, to them last year as well, and obviously to the UK last year. But I think the moment I remember was just watching the public vote for them and thinking, oh my gosh, are they going to do a UK this year and get a double null part? And I was hoping they wouldn't, I'll be honest. I was really hoping that they were going to get some points so that they wouldn't have to go through that.
Yeah, and they did deserve some points,
I think,
for that entry.
I think
it wasn't
every country
awful.
Does. It's just a bit dull.
Yeah, and it was so Germany getting null part from the jury. Switzerland had null part from the public vote.
Yeah, which I also thought was pretty harsh. I know it was kind of... again, it's a bland song. There was nothing too memorable about it. But one quite touching moment I saw that was on Eurovision Instagram page. Sam Ryder actually came and comforted Marius Baer, the Switzerland entry, when that was immediately announced. There's a little video of him just rushing over to give Marius Baer a hug. And it was so sweet because obviously he didn't need to do that at all.
No.
And maybe they knew each other and got on quite well. And you could see Marius is really quite upset about it all because he wrote that song, you know, it's very close to his heart. And obviously it's an awful thing to just be told the public, you know, you didn't get enough votes to even make it into a point. And it was so sweet of Sam to do that. But I think that sums him up, really.
Yeah, he seems like a really, really nice bloke, doesn't he?
Can we just have him again for next year?
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's Sam Ryder having another little go at it. Yeah, and he could write a song called Chase Man.
Yeah, no one will know.
Nobody will. Yeah, that'd be absolutely fine. Thank you for your company, really, over the last week. It's been really, really good fun. And thank you for getting in touch as well. So many people doing that. And you can keep those emails and those messages and those social media comments coming in. And, Kresh, you've got a few people that have been getting in touch there.
Yeah, and I reiterate that. I see Marta was saying thank you for the listeners' company, not mine. Thank you for that, Martin.
Oh no, you were absolute nightmare.
Yeah. Thanks for that. Thank you for all your emails. Thank you very much to Kim, by the way, who got in touch, and they said, I'll not be forgetting Eurovision 2022 anytime soon. So many great songs I'll be listening to for years to come, and if I ever met Sam, I'd want to hug him inappropriately hard and say a heartfelt thank you for his gift.
Don't do that.
Just, I mean, I don't think he'd mind, to be honest, but probably ask him before you do. Such a great performance and for representing our country with such joy and humility. And I'm happy that the voting public hate war more than they love any song. That feels right to me. What a year. Thank you for your brilliant podcast, guys. No worries, Kim. Thank you very much. And yes, you can call me Cress if you want to. Thanks for telling us your anecdote, by the way, as well, about how you walked down the aisle to Eurovision. That was, you might remember Kim mentioned this previously in another email. And they told us that as well, apparently their dad sang an altered version of Save All Your Kisses for Me as part of the bride speech as well, which sounds amazing.
This is dedication to the cause. Like it.
Amazing. I love that, Kim. That's fantastic. We might go into that another episode as well, but thank you for that. Yes, we still want to hear your reaction, by the way, to everything that's gone on. I know it can take a little while for everything to sink in, but we please send in your thoughts and everything. What are your thoughts on this whole narrative of, oh, Ukraine only won because they got sympathy votes? And also, can I just say this narrative as well, Martin, about the UK only did so well because they've been supporting Ukraine, whereas France and Germany didn't do well because they haven't been supporting Ukraine. No! Why
That's
can
nonsense,
people not
isn't
get it?
It
into their heads? It's because of a song. Why are people so adverse to realising that songs win because they're good? Why has it always got to be to do with politics or war? Why can't people just realise it was a good song?
Yeah, come on. Get it into your...
And why has it got to be, honestly, these newspaper things saying, well, the UK, because of course our Prime Minister has been supporting Ukraine. That's got nothing to do with it. Who gives a flip in any of these countries what we've been doing? Nobody. Right, that's my final rant of the episode. But if you do want to give us your thoughts on that or how the UK did, where do you think it's going to be hosted next year? Norpoirpodcast@gmail.com. We are also, of course, on Instagram as well, Norpoirpodcast. And let me just see. I think we did have a couple. I mean, we've had loads of people getting in touch. So I do appreciate, you know, everyone speaking to us and just popping up, giving their comments about everything. I do think we had something from Eurovision Brit, yes, who was telling us they love the podcast, but they did say they're very behind with the episodes. They're up to May the 10th before last night. So you've still got a way to go. Maybe you'll be listening to this in a couple of weeks' time. Who knows? But thanks for getting in touch, Eurovision Brit. And thank you very much, Tuneful TV, a.k.a. Nat, who we met in Turin.
It was great.
It was lovely to meet up with you. And yeah, thanks for hanging out with us. That was really good fun.
It was. You're absolutely bonkers, but I really enjoyed your...
You're crazy.
Yep. Crazy, but in a great way.
In a lovely way, yeah.
Now, thank you for listening to this edition of Nullpoir. We are not sure when we're going to do the next one, because no. we don't really know what's going on. But look, we're going to be back at some point. It might be a little bit more haphazard as and when there's stuff to talk about. But we will see you very, very soon. So thank you for listening. Thank you for your company. Hope you've had a brilliant Eurovision. Here's to the next one, wherever it might be.
Yes.
And everything you need to know and all the gossip and all the reaction and all the nonsense as well right here on the next edition of... Nulpois!